What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
We drink tequila. We talk.
Welcome to Team Tequila Talks.
All right, let's pour. Because we start off every Team Tequila Talks with a cheers. And we need something to cheers with. We are really mixing it up today. Pun intended?
A little bit, though.
Mixology?
Give it a little shake back and forth. It's all natural ingredients, so we'll kind of separate a little bit.
Okay, so we are mixing things up with Adam George, our mixologist. We don't use the term mixologist, right? We talked about this, but I guess what most people would think of as your traditional mixologist.
Yeah, words are a funny thing. They have power. They change over time. And mixologist was the perfect word for a period of time where I was like, oh, we're doing something that's different than your chain restaurants, your Applebee's. And then, of course, everyone gets a pushback. We're like, oh, no, I'm just a bartender. At the end of the day, call me whatever you want. As long as we're having a good drink, that's what matters. At the end of the day, I'm trying to offer a elevated experience that you won't be able to do for yourself. So if that for you is a bartender, if that's a mixologist, if that's just your best friend, any of those are fine to call me.
What about world-class bartender, which you are?
That's my...
I feel like I would lead with that. I am a world-class swimmer, bartender. Yeah. I feel like that's a good one.
Yeah, so to introduce myself to your audience a little bit, my name is... Cheers.
Cheers.
My name is Adam George Fournier. I have... been a hospitality professional for over 15 years. I'm getting up there. I've been running bars, restaurants, and hotels in Los Angeles for over a decade now. And I am the Diageo World Class U.S. Bartender of the Year for 2021. I represent the United States against 55 other countries. Came in the top five. And was also, just this past year, named one of them by magazine 75 people and places to watch for my work in non-alcoholic cocktails, which is what we're here to talk about today.
So, mixologist or otherwise, you serve great drinks.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's what we can say. Mm-hmm. And this is a very unique episode for us, your hosts, Cassandra Junimel and Sherian Gonzalez, because we're normally pouring tequila in this room, but with the explosion of the NA market, which we have tasted and dabbled, we are by no means matching the accolades that you just boasted right there, but we go to the store and buy a nice kin spritz from time to time because, you know, you don't want to necessarily drink every single day. We don't drink every day. So the ritual of it, I think for me, and the taste, and you get to the end of your meal and you just want something. If you're used to drinking wine, you're used to drinking a cocktail, your body and your brain are just accustomed to the habit and the ritual of getting a cool taste, like a cool tasting cocktail in your mouth.
And
what am
feeling.
I trying to say here, Chef?
Well, you're talking about your end of the meal ritual is like you're looking for a feeling. I know once I put my kid down and my husband's busy, I want to watch a show or read a book. And that hand to mouth action where you're just there and doing that, you want that feeling and the taste of very, very, very good spirit. And this is very tasty.
Yeah. I think that is the interesting space that has evolved with the non-alcoholic scenes that we're seeing evolve over the past several years. It has been an ongoing journey. And I really do think it is a natural outgrowth of the kind of mindful drinking that we taught people with the craft cocktail movement and craft beer movements and natural wines. Like, we've taught people to be so interested, rightfully so, in the flavors, the processes, where it's coming from, how it's being made, and to think about what they're putting in their bodies with these experiences, with these rituals.
Oh, we love that here, yeah. Because we're all about the quality of ingredients that you are putting in your body.
Absolutely. You have to be mindful about that. That naturally then leads into this outgrowth of, well, alcohol does have an effect on me. What am I doing? But I still love that ritual like you're talking about. And that's a lot of what I work to try to recreate at my restaurants and my bars when I'm coming up with non-alcoholic drinks. And it's a lot of what you're kind of seeing with these non-alcoholic brands. You do see some that are very like direct substitutes. Liars, L-Y-R-E apostrophe S. Does a really great job, especially in terms of, say, like their aperitivo kind of things. Like their, they would not use this for trademark reasons, but their Campari kind of analog, their red Italian bitters or apples, things like that. Things that are already are kind of low ABV have a lot of impactful power, and making really cool drinks with that. So you can get this kind of like non-alcoholic Negroni feel going. You also have brands like C-Lip, which are a distilled product, but non-alcoholic. So they're carrying a lot of flavor and that kind of same weight for it. And they're trying to do a direct one-to-one substitute of like, okay, you drink alcohol. Like what, how do you mix with something like that? Then you have something like Three Spirit here, which we're sipping on, which confusingly enough is not trying to, substitute a spirit. What they're doing, at least with their primary bottlings, is, looking to create a experience like you're talking about. We're sipping on the livener.
It's a ritual. It's kind of, I wouldn't say that this tastes like any specific beverage. Alcohol. I mean, I feel like the C-Lip is, oh, we're going to make a gin mocktail, and it translates that way. But this
is herby. It's herbaceous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very like, it tastes like, I don't know, tomato too. Are you tasting tomato?
I'm tasting berry.
Berry?
There's definitely a lot of berry in there. Some teas on those tannins on the back end. Wonderful thing that they're doing is, part of what you're probably getting from a little bit of that, tomatoes. There is a little, like a little beet kind of. I feel like we're ringing the bell now.
Yeah. Jeez, these sound effects.
It's a little beet. Oh, beet.
Yeah, beet.
That's what I'm tasting.
Oh,
I'm
that's like, the root veggie, mm-hmm. like the earthiness.
I have a very sophisticated palate, and I tasted the beet in this.
Well, that's the wonderful thing. Everyone actually does have a really sophisticated palate. They might just not know the word that has been agreed on by everyone, that this is what we're talking about, that flavor. But you've spent your entire life learning how to taste things and learning what tastes good. Anyone who says they don't have a good palate, really what I challenge you to is just what you haven't learned is the vocabulary yet. And if you're interested in learning that vocabulary, sit down with someone who knows it and they'll help you do it. But at the end of the day, what we're looking for and the way I try to teach people how to taste is to think about the experience of what they're tasting for. Like something that tastes like my grandfather's leather armchair in front of the fireplace is a lot more evocative to me than like, oh, it tastes like tobacco and leather. Like, what does that actually mean? Like, it takes you to a place.
Wait, what did you say? My grandfather's
leather chair in front of his fireplace.
I can smell it.
It takes you to a place. It takes you to that feeling. Ultimately, that's what a good drink of any sort should be able to do. That's, I mean, 90% of what we taste is what we smell. So you're always in that kind of interesting space as it goes. But going back to those idea of like experiences, like ultimately, I think one of the very fascinating things that I've discovered the past 2 years, really diving into this non-alcoholic space, after lockdowns was the style of people and when they're drinking non-alcoholics. It used to be, I think the perception was like 10 years ago, if you weren't drinking, you just weren't drinking. Right. And that's what it was for people.
There were no options. I think that there was O'Doul's back in the day. I remember my stepdad would have O'Doul's in the back fridge.
Yeah.
And that was his, oh, I'm not drinking tonight, but I want to have a beer. And it's a tough space because before it was either an O'Doul's or you just didn't drink.
Yeah. Or you had
Shirley Temple.
Yeah. Or you had like a soda water or like, this is the word I actually hate, mocktail, like just a bunch of juice and soda. Like, I don't like mocktail because I feel like it doesn't, there's something about it that feels like it's mocking the idea of not drinking. Like, oh, yeah, it's not cocktail. It's a mocktail. It's over here. But we're really struggling to find like a word that encompasses it for everyone, which is really unfortunate. Because
I was going to say, what's the word? I was hoping
you had one. I wish you see it all over the place, like no ABV, non-alcoholic, right. All these things. Like it's unfortunate that the way language has evolved over the past 150 years, we used to have the perfect term for it. It was a soft beverage. Hard beverages were alcoholic beverages,
soft beverages. Beverage, I'm thinking soda.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the way what language evolves and change, which is also why, again, I never get mad at anyone using a word to try to find the right space
for it.
Well,
the new term now is like sober curious. So it's like I was doing a little research on basically the last 2 years, like right before the pandemic, non-alcoholic beverages became, and there's these bars now that are popping up all the country. Yeah. Maybe you heard of them. They're called, they're like sober curious bars, and they don't serve any alcohol.
Yeah. I think the biggest example that how quickly and how large of an impact this kind of trend is having is that there is a fully non-alcoholic bar in Dublin, Ireland that I've been to. It's called
Dublin. That's yeah, something.
It's called Virgin Mary.
Of course, because they're Catholic. Yeah.
It's a great city, and it's an amazing bar. And you've got places like this popping up all over the world right now. Like there's I haven't seen a non-alcoholic bar in Los Angeles, fully non-alcoholic bar in Los Angeles, but there are non-alcoholic liquor stores, for lack of a better word, where they're only selling these kinds of products.
Boisson, am I saying that right? Boisson, B-O-I-S-S-O-N, they're opening, I think, they're based out of New York originally, and you can shop online. So you actually can go to Boisson online, and I believe that they ship everywhere because they are non-alcoholic.
Yeah.
Because being involved in a winery, I know that you have to get licensed in every single state to distribute. So we can ship to, you know, Delaware, but not Utah, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Not actually, I'm just giving an example. But with Boisson, because it's all non-alcoholic, you can ship wherever. So they are based out of New York. They now have three or four storefronts in Los Angeles. So you can get the experience of going in and talking to someone and say, how does this taste? Is this better for daytime or nighttime? I mean, even right now, what we're drinking.
I would drink that in a day. It's very nice.
Botanical Alchemy, Three Spirit.
Okay. What's the
live in her? Energizing, exotic, fiery.
There is something on the back of my tongue that is tingling.
Yeah, there's definitely some ginger in here and a little bit of that kind of feel for it. So that's one of the interesting things about a lot of the non-alcoholics is if you do drink alcohol, they're never going to be a perfect one-to-one substitute because there's always going to be that ethanol is missing, that burning, that weight, that feeling for it. So how do you come up with that? And depending on what you're trying to mimic or what you're trying to create, different people approach it differently. Three Spirits, like we were talking about, they're not trying to be a one-to-one substitute. They're trying to create mood. So they have a livener, a social, a nightcap, things that are more in those areas. And one of the things that I've been fortunate enough to do is I get to create a lot of my own non-alcoholic stuff, not only just cocktails, but essentially spirit bases to work with. So I get to control that kind of texture and that weight in a different way. One of the challenges that comes with working with non-alcoholic spirits is trying to get that weightiness into a drink for people, because a lot of times you can end up with something that's very thin, especially when you're looking at like, oh, it's just like a gin and tonic. I'm going to top it with soda, but without that extra weight, without that extra flavor.
So you're now just drinking soda water.
Yeah, you're pretty much just drinking soda water. So how do you end up with that weight back? Well, you end up with it with tannin, with teas, or with some sort of sweetener. It doesn't necessarily need to be like sugar, like a little bit of honey gives a really wonderful weight, or monk fruit is something I play around with a lot. That's
a wonderful
substitute. Yeah. I was doing a non-alcoholic orange cream soda for a while. So we were part of our sustainability practices. We would take our leftover orange juice from the end of the week. We'd clarify it, give it a little bit more of an acid strength, take a monk fruit vanilla syrup that we make, turn that all together, dilute it down, and then fully carbonate. So you end up with this really wonderful, like orange cream soda.
Syrup.
Yeah. I can give you the recipe for it. It's lovely. And it gave us a wonderful opportunity to like give the whole range of options for people. So we had the non-alcoholic version, then what we called the low ABV version, which would just be with sherry, which is wonderful fortified wines.
I love sherry.
I am a fortified wine.
Yeah.
You're a fortified something for sure.
I'm fortified fine is what it is.
And then we would do the full spirited version, which would be like a whiskey highball kind of an idea with Japanese whiskey. So that way it was a great encapsulation of all the options that you had for people. And going back to what I was saying, like seeing how people drink, I was expecting it to be a lot of people who are like, oh, we don't drink, so this is what we do. And we do have a lot of guests who come in for dinner who found out about us like, oh yeah, we don't drink. And they'll do a 4-course meal and they'll all have 3 non-alcoholic beverages, but that's all. Otherwise it would just been Cokes or sodas. So they're getting a better experience. But more than that, what we're seeing is people who go back and forth. It's people who are like, oh, I'm the designated driver tonight. I'd really love like an old fashioned right now, but I know I can't have this. What do we have for that? Or, hey, we're celebrating, you know, my wife's pregnant. We don't want to talk about that yet. What can we do? Well, awesome. We have something that looks like champagne in a glass. So no one needs to question about it and have these wonderful experiences.
It's still coming back to that ritual. Right. And listen, it would be in a perfect world, say, oh, this isn't a ritual. You just don't have to drink. But the reality is you spend your entire adult life. It's just incorporated into so many elements of life. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be. Lots of people are sober and have been for years. Very long time. Yeah. But to deny that it is a presence, that the ritual of drinking is present in life would be silly. The first thing that when a guest comes into your home, it's like, what can I get? Can I get your drink?
I love it too, because there's an old John Mulaney bit from way back in the day where he had stopped drinking. He's like, when you stop drinking, everyone forgets that anything exists. It's like, why do I say, oh, John, I know you don't drink. There's an old turnip in the fridge. Is that good for you? Thankfully, like, that's changed now. There are all these options. But it is about that experience. Like, food and drink are arguably what created civilization. There's always those old stories in the archaeological evidence that, like, hey, maybe agriculture came around because we wanted to settle down to be able to grow more grain to make beer. Like, what does that look like? So being able to incorporate that ritual and that experience in a way that is inclusive and mindful, that's why I always like to describe these kinds of drinks and thinking about menus as a mindful menu. If you treat these drinks in the same mindful way you would in creating a traditional cocktail menu or wine list or beer list or any of those things, they're going to be interesting and awesome. And honestly, part of it really started from the basic image of a group of people out at my bar, you know, 5 or 6 people, and they're all trying to take a photo for their Instagram or social media to show them a good time. And the one person who's not drinking has got soda water or the lime wine. That doesn't feel great. No. So how do we bring them into that conversation? How do they feel like they're having that moment, that experience? It's not experience focused on drinking. It's an experience focused on being out with their friends. Right. So how do we bring them in so they don't feel like they're an outsider? And one of the things we'll be tasting later today is something I've made myself. It's our Sakura Rose, quote unquote, champagne. It's a non-alcoholic rosé champagne, essentially, that we made to have this kind of experience where cheers? How do we celebrate? And how do we have a little bit of color and all those things? And it talks perfectly about it.
It's also, you're removing it from the conversation, because if someone's sipping something like this, it just looks like you're sipping a cocktail. And it's not like, hey, why aren't you drinking? Yeah. And you maybe don't want to answer the question of, I actually had a really bad day, mm-hmm. or I had a huge thing happen at work that I don't want to talk about. Yeah. So it's just you're trying to find your peace and separate yourself from maybe the reasons that you don't want to be drinking.
It's true.
And so the fact that this is an option that still allows you to be a part of the ritual is a huge thing.
Yeah. And it's, you don't want to slam this. I wouldn't say this is like... No. Juicy, where you're like, oh, I'm thirsty. You do actually want to sip it, and it's actually so you're not. I feel like sometimes when we do mocktails, you know, you see people just slurp them down because they're full of probably sugar, and
it's juice, it's water. There's like the thing that traditionally slows you down when having a cocktail is that alcoholic burn and what's going on in there, that weight of it. So again, it goes back to the idea of what are we creating for flavor, what are we creating for the experience. So. For example, we do both a non-alcoholic margarita and a non-alcoholic old fashioned on the menu, called the Marguerite and the Zero Fashion, that incorporate homemade non-alcoholic spirits that we make, quote unquote spirits, essentially really fancy teas. We take a lot of the things that you would traditionally get if you were to taste a tequila, like all the flavor notes you're pulling out when you're tasting these. We take a lot of those ingredients, like a little bit of jalapeno, cilantro, some mint, pineapple skin, things like that, and we sous vide them in water. And I actually use seed lip as part of that base as well, because it's got a little bit of that viscosity. It's got a little bit more complex flavor. Sous vide those in and strain them out. You will have this wonderful like flavor complex that if you drink it, you're like, oh, that tastes like tequila. But if you build a cocktail around it, you're suddenly getting the tasting notes.
I think that's so key for NA drinks. It's because when a company tries to straight up replace tequila, they're not going to succeed because tequila is tequila.
No, I'll just I'll have a tequila. I will replace rosé with a. I think any type of wine is easily more replaceable than I would. I would never have a tequila mocktail.
Yeah, I do think that the lower ABV categories lend themselves to a little bit more of a replacement, a little bit more easily, because there is traditionally more. Something else going on there.
Right.
Like wine still got residual sugar or something.
So your the vermouth. Liqueurs, the Aperols. Mm-hmm. I had an NA Aperol spritz a few weeks ago that was delicious.
Yeah. There's wonderful, wonderful stuff out there. Liars actually just won a really big award for their Italian bitter. Essentially those kinds of things. And I do highly recommend them for things like that. Like they work really well to like mix. And also they're also a great opportunity to mix something that's a lower ABV drink for yourself at home. For instance, I do enjoy a Negroni, but I don't want to have three of them all the time. So having something that, you know, pulling out one of the alcohol components of that with
and
a non-alcoholic thing,
adding,
you can lower, you can lower that ABV for it. So now all of a sudden you're having again that weight. And then you're still having that ritual.
Right.
It's just about being mindful for it. Lower ABV drinking or non-alcoholic drinking, like we talked about with a lot of our experience with people, is not always about like full-on abstinence.
Right.
It's about having more control over...
it's about drinking less.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, we all know our livers are our livers and we're not getting any younger. And, you know...
Speak for yourself.
I know. Look, me and age. But it's like you don't want to constantly... I know for me, drink daily. I have a family. I have things to do. I like to look forward to drinking. Mm-hmm. And when I can't look forward to drinking anymore, I'm like, I need to reel it back.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but I want to replace it with one of these guys.
Yeah.
So another concept, you're talking about, you know, the teas and using teas as a base, which this does as well. We have spoken about adaptogenics before. And I think that that is part of, you know, there's this whole category of nootropics and adaptogenics, which is, I think, Ken might not have been the first, but I think that they were one of the first and kind of pretty big on the market. But you've got things like L-theanine, I believe.
L-theanine.
We've got the bottle right here. I'm going to look. L-theanine. Mm-hmm. So L-theanine is actually an amino acid. So it's like it's part of a protein and it can be found here. It is derived from green tea in the three spirit, but it also can be found in certain medicinal mushrooms. And it is said to have a relaxing effect. Mm-hmm. So it is supposed to be, you'll see it a lot in some of these low ABV or faux ABV liqueurs, because you're wanting that calming effect the same way that you would with a nightcap. And that is going to be like, you know, the dream spritz, I think they have that tastes kind of like a cream soda.
Yeah.
And then this brand does make a nightcap. Mm-hmm. The difference being, because L-theanine does relax you, but this one also has caffeine.
Yeah.
So if you're social, you're in the mood, this is called a livener. This is I'm going to a party and everybody's going to be loud and drunk and rowdy and I want to keep up, or I want to participate and also be, you know, going with that higher energy. That's where the caffeine comes in. So you're talking about with some of these drinks, not having that weight of the alcohol, but there's also, they're starting to work in these things about having not exactly the same effect as alcohol, but you might get a little tingly in your fingers, especially if you are sensitive to caffeine. You know, you got to be mindful of how much you are drinking.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's another thing that I always point out on menus is if there is caffeine or anything that might be like a nootropic or a euphoric or anything like that, that might be involved in these things, because you want to be mindful of what people are, why they might not be drinking. So you want to give them all the information up front, because many people who are not imbibing alcohol also are like, I don't want caffeine. I'm super sensitive to it. So what does that look like? You don't want to surprise them at the end of the night with oh, this thing's delicious, but I don't sleep for 3 days. So it's really going back again to the idea of like trying to give our guests as much information as you can. But also when you're talking about like, what is the occasion for this? Well, you're out with your friends, things like what is the experience that you're looking to replace with this beverage? And I think the really interesting thing that it always comes back to is just always some sort of social engagement. And the more we can remove a stigma from this idea of like, oh, you have to be drinking. Why aren't you drinking? Right. What's going on? The more it can just be a natural part of the conversation and not an afterthought and something that is fully incorporated.
Right.
The more options we give people, the more options we give people, the more reason we have to be social and enjoy each other. And that's for the best for everyone, for the hospitality industry, for individuals. I mean, the hospitality industry is constantly growing and changing, and is one of those places where you really do have to give people an excuse to leave their house. I used to call it the you put on pants philosophy.
Yeah.
It's you put on pants and got off your couch so to come to my bar. So no matter what, you're paying more money than if you just bought a bottle of Jack Daniels and watched Game of Thrones reruns tonight. Totally. So how do I make that worthwhile for you?
See, I appreciate hearing that, because sometimes I do think in the hospitality business, sometimes people forget that you're coming there for an experience.
Yeah.
You know, and we go to nice restaurants. Like, we love, me and Cassandra, we love an experience.
We're foodies.
And sometimes I think in certain restaurants or businesses, they forget that. And I look forward to that. If I don't have a kid, a husband, and I'm out with my girlfriends, I want all the things. I'm like, hey, make me a special drink. And when someone's like, well, I'll make you a vodka soda, I'm like, no, I come here for that.
I can do that myself.
Yeah, I mean,
that's exactly what you were saying at the beginning, is they call me whatever you want to call me, but ultimately I'm giving you an experience that you cannot replicate on your own.
And to be fair, like, there are a wide spectrum of experiences. Like, sometimes the experience is, I want to go to my neighborhood dive bar. Sometimes the experience is, hey, I know that they make a really solid espresso martini here, I just don't want to think about it. And sometimes it's, I really want to have a foodie night out. I think that the danger that can happen sometimes is expecting an experience at a place that's not equipped for it. And that can cause conflict. If you've ever seen a Yelp review, that's probably what it is. So it's one of those things, like, I always try to be very careful to not be like, oh, if you're not doing this stuff, making it in-house on your own, it's not worth it. No, that's absolutely not true.
Right.
And I think that's one of the wonderful things about the explosion in this category is, like, I'm very fortunate. I run a, you know, a more fine dining bar in a restaurant. So I have the capacity and the staff and the technical knowledge to be able to make these things on my own. But if I was running a nightclub, I wouldn't be able to make enough non-alcoholic rosé to keep up with that demand at all. But there are brands like that. Three Spirits actually has a wonderful couple of carbonated quote-unquote wines that they're just releasing. That, again, they're not trying to substitute like a Chardonnay or a Merlot. It's like, hey, here's our red that's got a feeling to it and a white that's got a feeling to it. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing with those. And that's fantastic, because you can kind of push those envelopes on those kind of more experiential, smaller foodie sides to then bleed into a different kind of vibe that helps, destigmatize it and prep people. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, the only way people learn to appreciate a finer dining experience or a special occasion is by being prepped for it. I've seen so many people in my life who've walked into a, you know, one of my, you know, I ran the Nomad downtown. I worked very,
such
very,
a cool spot.
Yeah. I'm so sad that it's gone, but yeah, I've worked with a lot of, like, really high end, places, and there are places that people are kind of, like, aspirational to go to. So they'll come in on, like, an anniversary or a birthday, something really special, but, like, you can sometimes see that they don't have much experience with the quote unquote, the rules of fine dining.
Right. And then they freeze when they go to order. Right.
Right.
And they're like, I guess I'll just have
a burger.
Right. And that's where it comes in on, you know, a good staff. They can help guide you through that. Like, I always like to describe, like, I always want my bartenders to be like the entrance to fine dining, where it's like, you can sit down at the bar and have a great meal, but it's not going to be intimidating. We can walk you through this. And if you just happen to stumble in on the place, weren't expecting a fine dining experience, that's fine. Like, again, experience isn't for everyone all the time, but I want you to have a really good experience with us. So when you want to have that experience, you'll come back, and then we can help walk you through it. So then you can learn more. We can send you out to other places to appreciate that, because life is short.
I tell my husband all the time, because he now just lets me do my thing. I'm the order in our relationship.
My partner is too. I haven't looked at a menu in 7 years.
I can look at a menu and be like, yes, no, yes, no. I'm not going to like this, but the table is, so I'm going to get it, because it, like, maybe it has olives or something. And I don't do olives, but I know that, like, the table will appreciate it. But even when we're on date nights, it's not that he doesn't get a say, it's just that I'm really good at ordering, and he all the time has order envy. And I always like to go to the server or the bartender, or even if you're lucky enough to say, to have some type of contact with the chef, whether that is firsthand or through a server or manager, and I always say, well, what do you think? Not in a cocky way, impress me, but they're going to want to impress you. They're going to want to show you a good time. Anybody that is at a nice fine dining establishment is going to want to give you that experience. So let them.
Yeah.
If you don't know where to start, say, I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best thing you can do in a restaurant like that.
I 100% agree. I think it's really, it's sometimes it's easy to forget that like everyone in the restaurant is actually on your side. Everyone's cheering for you. The way I always try to coach it too is like, people oftentimes don't know what they want. They don't know what it's around for, but finding that out for people is part of the joy of the job, but how you go about that can make a huge difference on the experience. So what I always try to do is always try to start off with how people are in the mood, where they're looking for, what kind of vibe. And I generally walk through it. I skip like what base spirit you want or what's that. It's like, okay, are you looking for something lighter, something effervescent? Do you like a martini? Do you like a Manhattan? What's your vibe right now? Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I always try to pull out something positive that someone are looking for, because you cannot believe the amount of times you ask someone's like, what do you like? It's like, oh, I don't like this, or I don't want that. It's like, that's great. That's fantastic. But what do you want?
Right.
Like, is there, do you like fruity? Do you like effervescent? Do you like drier?
Do you like boost forward?
Exactly. Yeah. Something like that. That's
depending
like,
on your day. You know?
Yeah. Just something that gives you an idea of like, okay, this is something that you'd be interested in trying. And then if my staff's always trained to this, if they should be asking, do you have any dietary restrictions or aversions? That's where we can be like, cool. Are you allergic to anything? Is there anything you really don't? So I never drink coffee. Awesome. Great. So we've got something to work with now. And honestly, what that does, sneakily enough for me, is it helps prime you to enjoy what I'm about to give you, because I've already given you a positive association.
Right.
Rather than you waiting for me to give you something that's like too sweet or not great, you're like, oh, I had a great conversation. I want to try something new. I do like fruity things that are effervescent. Oh, this is fruity and effervescent. Oh, you know what? This is actually, okay, cool.
So now, you're actually like a psychologist too.
Bar psychologist.
You're like a bar psychologist.
The California Bar Association won't let me legally say that. But.
Well, we're going to try, like speaking that. Of trying something new, we are going to try the wine.
Yep.
We're going to try this sparkling rosé concoction. As we are pouring here, want to touch back on the nootropics one more time, because I realized that we didn't really explain what a nootropic is for people that don't know what it is. And it is – a nootropic is a supplement, and it's usually going to come from some type of plant, whether that is, you know, tea, mushroom, root, herbal, or otherwise. And they're still exploring a lot of the science. We talk about food science a lot here on Team Tequila Talks, but this is also going to, certain plants are going to give you certain effects in your body, physiological, when you digest them, which is why when you drink coffee, also from a plant, you're going to feel caffeinated. You're going to feel, you know, warm. It's going to get your metabolism going. It's probably going to make you go to the bathroom, right? So, you know, the whole concept behind nootropics is that there are all of this wide range of, in the plant world that can help calm you down, that can help pep you up, that can help give you energy, that can help you focus, that can help turn your brain off if you're having a hard time sleeping. So you really got to look into what you want to accomplish with a nootropic before you just say, well, which one should I take?
Yeah.
Because it's not as simple as...
Well, I think... We've drank non-alcoholic beverages. Sometimes with my friends, they come over and we're like, she's like, look, girl, I'm not drinking. I just had a rough day the other day and like, I'm sober. And sometimes we'll just have like, I'll have three out. We'll drink two completely separate ones.
Yeah.
Because you're just not your vibe. And I think, you know, when it comes to wine too, it's like you should have a variety. What I love about what the explosion is that now there's a variety. Because when I was pregnant and I was trying not to drink and I had some Christmas gift, some terrible non-alcoholic wine. Like, I was just like, this tastes like dirt.
It can taste a little juicy. We're going to try this one and see what it tastes like. So, for nootropics, they're still... Ooh.
Love that.
For nootropics, they are still doing a lot of research, but I find that they work. I know that when I'm looking for a nightcap, as you say, when I'm at home by myself, because I don't drink by myself. So when I'm at home and I, you know, kids are in bed and all of a sudden I'm like, well, I want to wind down, but I don't want a glass of wine by myself. I really find that the L-theanine and some of the other nootropics are really beneficial. So look into it. Google it, because it's different for everybody. There's not a one size fits all. There's a bunch of different ones. Just Google nootropic, relaxing, uplifting, etc. And there's a bunch of products, not even just in NA drinks, but also in pill form and supplements.
Oh, and gummies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So,
this is, as I said, this is the Sakura Rose champagne.
Just dove in.
And this is essentially a non-alcoholic sparkling, quote unquote, wine that we make in house.
It's so good.
That we carbonate
and
ourselves.
And you guys only make this. This is not like for sale anywhere.
No, this is not for sale
anywhere.
People are
going to have to come and see it.
This is something we make in house. So the process for this is it's a blend of two different teas, just a rose petal tea. So just rose petals. So give that wonderful color and that floral sense.
It's very pink.
And a sakura green tea. So you're getting that kind of floral niceness from that. Steeped, diluted down. Then we're adding a bit of verjus. Verjus is essentially unfermented grape must. It's like essentially what you can make a grape vinegar out of. So it's like
it has a very slight vinegary, mm-hmm. like it's the weight.
It's giving that weight for it. So like it's like unfermented wine almost before it turns into vinegar. It's used a lot in cooking. You can get it in both a red and a white version. A couple little things, a little bit of sugar here there just to balance it out. And then actually what we do is we make essentially a yeast stock where we kill off the yeast, because when you have champagne, you're getting that breadiness, you're getting that weight from that yeast. So what we're doing is we're adding that in with the intention to give that kind of like weight for it, but without it to ferment. So you boil the yeast, you're still getting the flavors,
so
all stuff.
Technical.
Yeah.
So technical.
And then the reason it's in this bottle is because we're self-carbonating it ourselves. So it's a forced carbonation with a carbonation rig. This is actually for a machine you can get for your house. It's called DrinkMate. It's very similar to a SodaStream.
Like a SodaStream. Yeah.
Very similar, but except it's actually physically designed to be able to carbonate everything, not just water. SodaStream is, you can, but they really don't recommend carbonating anything other than water because it can back up inside of the machine.
Right.
This has a, for the whole machine, has a separate lid onto it that prevents that backup on it. So you can carbonate orange juice. You can carbonate literally anything you want. So for a lot of bars who don't want to build their own full carbonation rig, it's, you know, it's a $90 product that works off SodaStream bottles that you can batch up and do. So we have a couple of those in rotation.
Yeah,
makes it real nice and easy.
So would you say this is an upper or a...
I would say this is an celebratory and slightly upper. Like it's got a little bit of that green tea and it's a very low low amount to it, but it is meant to be that kind of celebratory thing. It's, hey, we walked in, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, have all this stuff. And it's, you know, it's rosé. Like how
it's
are you not
so
going to enjoy
pretty.
It? It's very pink. It kind of has a natural wine look to it. So when mm-hmm. you said unfermented wine, that's what that made me think of, because it does look, if you've ever had natural wine, it's cloudy and it's kind of got that more juice-like look to it. It's not as clarified as a standard wine.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, just going back to that food science, wine naturally has a lot of particulates in it and usually is used what's known as fining agents. Used in it to filter out a lot of sediment to make sure you can get as much out of it as you want and produce that clarity of color. You can do that. There's nothing wrong with it. It works great. But like in this case, it's like, well, we're just making it in-house. We don't really need to. And it's one of those things like depending on where it is in the batch, like some of it will settle out. It'll be great. But because it is like fully carbonated, like that bubbles, you can see how aggressive
very
that carbonation
bubbly.
Is.
Well, I need the bubbles.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I even do, like, I like this for the daytime, but all of my NAs that I drink at night have to have a fist.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite.
I need fizz.
See, I want, I am inclined toward the fizz during the day.
Sure.
Even if, you know, we just had Papillon as well, ooh. And that is certainly not necessarily in the mocktail or NA space, but it is a healthier version of a soda and it has some flavor to it and such. And I want something like that during the day. At night, I want something like a sipper that is going to more replace that whiskey, big ice cube, that type of very straightforward and potent punch on the tongue.
Yeah, I got some tricks for you with that then too. So we make a non-alcoholic whiskey in-house for our zero fashion. And there are some great non-alcoholic whiskey brands that are on the coming market now. But again, you're always running into that problem of weight. So one of the things that we do is, again, we're making it ourselves. So we're a little more fine control of what's going on there. But what we make to balance it out is we make what we call mash bill syrup. So what we do is we make a syrup, essentially a grain tea out of the grains that go into a whiskey. So we toast some barley, some rye, and some wheat, give it a nice little aromatic, steep that in hot water, blend it and strain it out. So you have this like wonderful like barley tea, and then make a simple syrup out of that, 1-to-1 by weight. And then if you stir that with the whiskey, you're essentially flavoring your old fashioned with an old fashioned. Mm-hmm. So you're adding some of that flavor back in, a little bit of that weight. And depending on like how non-alcoholic you want to be, Fee Brothers makes mostly non-alcoholic bitters. They're glycerin-based, so they're like below 10% for most of them. Two dash of them is like the equivalent of like swishing your mouth with mouthwash, like the amount of alcohol you'd absorb for it, kind of like non-alcoholic essentially. But again, always like to let people know, because some people are like, hey, that's even too much on where I'm at in my journey. You can add, they have make some great like molasses bitters or black walnut bitters or things like that that you can add in there that give you this experience of having more of that whiskey on a rock or a cocktail without having it be too thin or missing out on some of those elements that you're getting from just like a whiskey or a tequila neat.
Yeah. I mean, just hearing you talk about that syrup, first of all, I need to come to your bar. I'm thinking like, wait, we've never been there? I feel like we go everywhere. And I'm like, I want some of that syrup.
There is so much demand for fine dining and such a demand for people who want to like try something new, something different. Like there's a lot of, but it is convincing people to drive 15, 20 minutes, which is again, where these non-alcoholics come into, because I'm also recognizing that like, great, you took the time to come out with me tonight. Someone is probably driving at least 20 minutes to get you home tonight. How do we make sure they're still involved? How do we make sure everyone feels safe? And like, they're not missing out on part of the experience. Like we want you to have dessert. That's part of the experience. It's decadent. It's awesome.
Oh yeah.
But we know that, hey, maybe you can't have another martini to go along with your dessert. Right. So what do you have instead?
Well, I think just also mixing in, if you're doing a several course meal, you can go alcoholic and then non-alcoholic. Yep. So then you're only having two drinks instead of four. And to me, that's just pacing. You're going to feel great the next day.
Yeah.
And you're still getting that whole experience.
And just another like side effect that you'll see if you're filtering more of these is your actual, like if you're being interested in watching your calorie intake, is your actual notes, your calorie intake will go down. I've talked to a lot of the folks who run non-alcoholic bars. Like, yeah, the one problem we have is people will have about two or three drinks and then they'll be gone. And traditionally, like very, especially high volume bars rely on much more volume, but like without that lowering of inhibitions of alcohol, there is less of a reason to have a fourth drink or a fifth drink or something that's that's taking you beyond that. So again, it's about being very mindful about what you're doing.
Well, and we've talked before about the metabolic process of how your body digests alcohol. And alcohol has been called the fourth macronutrient because your body doesn't process it in the same way it's going to process a protein, a fat, a carbohydrate. It is going to get a detour once it goes down your throat, and it's going to go, your pancreas and your insulin is going to go ding, 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 ding. This is a toxin and it's going to send it to your liver. So it's a lot less about the calories that you're getting from the alcohol itself, because you're not really absorbing those. But if you're only drinking straight, neat liquor, you clearly have an intention to like, to really tie one on. Tie one off? Tie one on.
Tie one on.
Tie one off? Tie one on.
Tie one off.
Taiwan off. But or you mix it with soda, and again, you're not adding any calories there. But what fun is that? Especially if you're going to a nice restaurant where you want the experience of, impress me, show me what you do differently here that you don't do somewhere else, and how's it going to pair with my food? But when you do drink, it can make you a little hangry. If you like, it doesn't matter if you already ate, but like you'll get really peckish.
Like,
they've done a bunch of studies on this, and if you are drunk, you are way more inclined to eat more, and you're inclined to reach for the snack cabinet or come home and start fishing around in your pantry or your fridge, even though if you hadn't been drinking, you probably wouldn't do that.
No, and you're not actually hungry. The science behind that is like, you're looking for another, the hand-to-mouth thing.
Yeah.
And now that you're done drinking, your body is now like, so you're not, they say that if you're really like intoxicated or even just a little bit and you go for the snack cabinet, they were like, your brain to gut connection has been disrupted.
Oh,
and so you're actually looking for just something to put in your mouth because you're done with the hand to mouth drink. Oh, it's like a Starbucks cup theory.
So the study that I saw was, I believe it was in the UK. Not that that matters. But they had two groups, and they all had the same, they controlled them so that they had the same diet during the day or the same amount of calories or whatever. And they gave one group NA beer, and they gave the other group beer, and they put a bunch of bar snacks on the table. So I'm talking like popcorn, nuts, pretzels, snack mix, right? And they didn't tell people what they were monitoring. Oh my gosh. Monitoring. This is an NA episode and I'm still having trouble getting words out.
What did you put in your drink?
What did I sneak
in here? It's a bubbly experience rising up on you.
But they had these two groups, and the group that had the NA beer ate like a third of the amount of snacks than the group that had the alcoholic beer, because you're wanting that salt. You're wanting that hand to mouth. It is making you hungry, especially when we're talking about, you know, beer, because that's going to start messing with your glucose levels and stuff like that, to it, where it's going to make your blood sugar go, hey, I want more food. I want more food. Mm-hmm. So there is science to this. And I feel like having an NA option is not going to make you as peckish later, but you do get to have that experience. It's just, it is another upside of doing that. It's probably bad for the restaurant business, but good for your nutrition.
No, honestly not. Like it's having more options is never a bad thing. Like,
agreed.
Like the non-alcoholic section of the menu is never going to outsell or overtake traditional alcohol sales anytime soon. But having that option really does make people feel more welcome, and does honestly capture a revenue stream that is a little unexpected. Currently right now, especially, you know, coming out of lockdowns and inflation is what it is. Yeah. Everything you can do to help that bottom line as a business is really helpful. Like I was saying earlier, look, we do have a good amount of our guests who come in, especially earlier in the week, who are non-drinkers, who found out about us because of conversations with a non-alcoholic menu. And like they come in and they do, between five people, probably do like $600 to $700 worth of food for a meal. And then, you know, 2-3 non-alcoholic beverages each, which again, they're not being costed the price of a soda.
Right.
So you're still, $14 still, non-alcoholic beverage is going to still be way better for a revenue stream than a free soda.
Like $2 soda.
I mean, we're not charging $14 for the non-alcoholics yet, but like that is also something.
I don't know, maybe you put gold or something in there.
Well, I mean, that is also another factor. I think that as we talk more about this and people learn more too, like the understanding of that price that goes into it makes more sense to people as well. I know that even I personally, when Seedlip first came out, I was like, why would anyone pay this much money for something that doesn't have alcohol in it? And now it's easier to see like the value that goes along with that. But a big part of that does come along with what is the experience that you're replacing for it. When you are drinking alcohol, no matter what the other things are going to have, part of that experience of your what your money is paying for is that ethanol, is the effect on your body.
100%.
So if that's not part of the equation anymore, what is that being substituted with? Is it because, great, the experience is I get to wake up in the morning and feel better. It's I get to drive my friends home. It's I get to be a part of this. It's, oh, I still get a thoughtful drink that goes along with this. I like whatever that is, like the you have to think about, like as a drink maker, what that experience substitute is, and how you're going to give that to people, because that is the biggest point where the price discrepancy.
And I think that's where the nootropics come into play too. If you're buying something on your own, or even if you are going somewhere that offers that as an option, because you're still getting that experience, but I'm willing to pay more for this beverage as opposed to just a soda water, because the L-theanine is going to help me relax or something.
Right. I'm looking to relax. So even if I have an NA, it has to have some type of nootropic, some type of, you know, the alchemy. It has to have something in it.
Something that comes, chamomile tea even. Something that's going to give you that feeling of relaxation in your body for those things.
So for people that are wanting to explore this space a little bit more, they give them a supply list.
Get
what's a supply list where people can kind of mimic that ritual at home and maybe have that NA experience but not feel overwhelmed?
Absolutely. So one of the wonderful things that's exploded now is the RTD category, the ready to drink category, canned drinks, canned things like that. There are some wonderful brands out there that are already doing non-alcoholic versions. The one drawback that you'll see a lot in that space is that they are almost all going to be carbonated in some way. There's something about the experience of cracking a can. And it's also going back to that conversation of weight and impact on your tongue. Carbonation, those bubbles, really helps mask some of that lack of the burn for it. Three Spirits, like I said, is a great brand to try out some different stuff. They have some wines again coming out. If you're looking to just try to sip something on the rocks, their nightcap for the evening is a great spot to go for.
Yep.
But if you're looking to like make some stuff at home, I would say really just dive into some creativity and really look at it. There's a wonderful, wonderful book from the Alinea Group, the group behind, you know, some of the best restaurants and bars in the world, called Zero, which is all about how they do non-alcoholics in their bars. And they're a laboratory. So you're not going to be making this stuff at home. But the wonderful thing about it is they do have recipes like, oh, if you don't have our equipment, here's how you just make it on an open stove. But I recommend it not so much as like, hey, you're going to make this at home, more as like, what's some inspiration? What sounds interesting? Right. How are they putting together flavors in interesting ways? Because one of the other really cool things that happens in this non-alcoholic space is once you divorce it from the history of this is how you drink gin. This is traditionally what mixes well with whiskey. And suddenly you're with like, hey, I just have these flavors and I need to make them taste good. You end up with this ability to experiment more in a way that goes back towards what is the experience. Are we making something that's going to self-carbonate? Are we making something that's bottled? Are we making something to sip on? What are you doing for that? But yeah, I guess so. Going back to shopping list. Find some canned RTDs, find something, experiment that. That's the easiest way. Package, don't need to do anything. You can crack it open, just have a seltzer and be around with everyone. After that, I would say do a little research on some brands and try some stuff out. Like I said, the Liars, like more like the Vermouth and Aperitivo kind of stuff, works really well. It's also a great tool to then use to mix lower ABV drinks. And then moving into the nootropics, I really do like the three spirit stuff. I think it is very versatile and I think you'll see a lot more of them around. But that would be where I would start and then just go to town.
I like to soy a lot too. DESOI. Yeah. That, and Katy Perry is involved with that brand.
I'll have to look it up.
We've talked about celebrities getting involved in liquor brands, yep, and spirits and all of those things. And they also have the L-theanine and they have some of the nootropic effects as well. And I like that brand because, again, it doesn't feel like it's trying to be an Aperol spritz. But it is carbonated, like you said. Yep. It's canned. Yep. Yeah. But
most of them are.
Most of them are. But it works. And it feels like it has a complexity and it has a little bit of that bite to it. Like what you were talking about with the weight and having that bite in your mouth. It has that. And they make three different flavors. And I do find that after two of them, I feel pretty calm.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a tea base. It's a tea base. It's the same idea. Yeah. So that's a good brand too. And then you can check out Boisson, as we mentioned earlier, as well, because they will ship nationwide.
Yes.
And so it's super easy. Obviously, the downside of not having going in person to that store is you can't really talk to somebody and say, this one's been selling really well. This one hasn't. Yeah. And you just have to kind of try for yourself.
Yeah. Like I just researched. I looked at the ingredients that I know that I like. And you can literally type them into Google and type in non-alcoholic and a bunch of them come up. And I just buy one can or one bottle and I try it for a while. It's really trial and error.
It's a very much a growing space. But the wonderful thing is that like many of these trends, like it is evolving in the restaurant and bar and hospitality space. So find a bar or a restaurant that you really like and ask your bartender that you have a rapport with and be like, hey, what do you think about this? What would you do with this? And look online, like Virgin Mary, like I said, Dublin's doing really great work. There's also a lot of really wonderful, you know, spirits educators online, as we all had to transition into something when we could do stuff where we were walking you through how to like make things online or giving you tips and tricks for that kind of thing. There's wonderful resources out there to go whatever route you want. But I do think it is one of those things that we are still in the early days of it. Mm-hmm. So you are going to have to ask someone, do a little research and find out what you like. So as always, when people are starting something new, I always recommend start small. Don't invest in three cases of something off the bat.
Right.
And the other thing I always recommend, and this goes for trying out new cocktails or new spirit as well, is look at how you normally imbibe, what you normally. So like the example I always give is I'm a big whiskey guy and people always like to ask like, well, how do I get started on whiskey? I want to drink whiskey neat. How should I do this? So like, okay, well, what do you normally drink? It's like, I drink margaritas. Awesome. We're not going to start there. What we're going to do is we're going to make you a Gold Rush, lemon, honey, bourbon. We're going to do that for a while. And then we'll go to maybe like an old fashioned, getting a little more booze forward. Yep. Then we'll do it on the rocks and then we'll get around. So like you're easing your way into how you're doing that. So if you like spritzes, you like wine, go that way with a non-alcoholic route. Yeah. If you're looking for something that is more of a stirred route, go look at more of like the Liars and the Seedlips that are going to be more of like direct replacements. And I say to lump sealip in as like a direct replacement, because it's not, but it is a distilled flavor, right. And they have different versions of it. So they work really well to build things together, as long as you're paying attention again, that weight and stuff that goes along with it. So if you think about what you're trying to replace in your experience, that will help narrow down what style you're looking to buy. And then it's much more of an easy conversation with someone at a store or a Google search to say, okay, what are people doing with this that I want to try out?
Right.
Well, and we didn't even get into the CBD beverage market.
That's a whole different story.
That might have to be another episode.
It's a completely different conversation. Actually, I right before lockdown, I was consulting on a CBD lounge to do cocktails for them right before the lockdown happened over here in West Hollywood. Wow. And, of course,
I like my CBD in a gummy. I just want it in a gummy.
It's all about experience and what's going on. And I think that, again, it's about anything that's going to impact your body and make you change out of your, whatever your baseline is, mm-hmm. you have to have a familiarity of how it's going to affect you. And I do think there has to be some sort of regulation you have an expectation of what's going to happen when you're doing it. Like, what is a standard dose? What does that do to me? Like, what is a standard drink? What is a standard nootropic? What is a standard CBD? Like, any of those things. Again, word I always come back to is mindful.
Yes.
Mindful.
Mindful non-drinkers.
I know. I've got, like, nothing.
I know.
Here, I got some more.
More. And I'm so sorry, guys, but I'm going to post this, but you can't buy it, but you can go to it.
You can go to it
if you were in California.
We do sell this as $7.50s from the bar if you want to. So one of the things we do with this,
you could take it
home. But one of the things that we did for it is because, again, we're trying to recreate the experience of it. We're like, what if the whole table wants to have a non-alcoholic drink? So here's a bottle of wine for you. Yeah. You can pop it.
And what's the name of your bar?
It is Wolf's Glen.
Wolf's Glen.
In Westwood.
Wolf's Glen.
Cheers. Adam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll see you at Wolf's Glen soon. Yeah. Your host, Cassandra Dunamel and Sharon Gonzalez. Thanks for listening to Team Tequila Talks, and we will see you soon.
Yes, I feel so educated. I really feel great about this.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.